After an 11-year martini break, Will and Grace is back on TV with the show's original cast. Writers and directors Eric McCormack, Deborah Messing, Sean Hayes, and Megan Mullally are finally the perfect age to play the original oddball New York aristocrats. In the 90s, the original sitcom broke new ground by featuring two gay characters as part of the central cast. But now, the show is returning to a world that has changed with the mainstreaming of gay characters. Will new audiences love the good old Will and Grace again?
Today, we take a look at the new Will and Grace TV reboot. Can the show survive in a web streaming world where LGBT characters go full frontal? Plus, Alexander Billings shows it all on Amazon's Transparent.
The first same-sex couple gets legally married in Germany.
The Cher Show, a musical on Cher's life, will premiere in Chicago.
And the unexpected consequences of Trump's monstrous failure to bring relief to Puerto Rico. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Depending on how you see a thing.
You have some 90s nostalgia there?
I have some 90s nostalgia. I just feel like with Star Trek back on the air and Will and Grace back on the air and Republicans are evil again.
Everything old is new again.
Everything
that's for sure.
Is like, when will we learn, honey? When will we learn?
Well, but some people have learned we're not getting a Sex and the City reboot. That finally came out.
What? We're not?
Well, they were going to have to do a part three and they finally came out and said, nope, it's not going to happen. You know who doesn't want to do it?
I know Cattrall. Why. Yeah. Kim Cattrall and Sarah Jessica Parker hate each other's guts. Right. And in fact, in the last movie that they made together, all those scenes were filmed separately.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's that, like, the scenes where they're talking to each other, if you notice, they're not really in the same room together.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first movie, when it came out, made $400 million. The second one made $300 million. And I can't imagine these things have huge budgets. So it's like, couldn't you see yourself around, like, getting, like, you know, 10, don't you need $10 million? Don't you need $20 million? How much would you actually make for something like that, you know?
What was the plot of Sex and the City 2?
That's when they went to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, but before they went to Abu Dhabi, what was the plot of Sex and the City 2? It was about
somebody was trying to get the groove back, right?
It was about a couple where the husband liked to stay home and watch old black and white movies.
In the bedroom.
In the bedroom. And the wife was always wanting to go out and do stuff.
Yes. And so that's kind of like us. I always want to go out and do stuff, and you want to stay at home and watch stuff.
At the time period that movie came out, and for people who've been listening to this podcast for 13 years, will remember that we used to have this kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. And when you and I went to see the movie with Curtis Jensen, I was like going, holy shit, they made this movie just for me. It really felt like Sex and the City 2, of all the films I've ever seen in my life, spoke to me and my reality at the time more than any other film. And it's a piece of shit. It's a garbage film.
Because you thought it spoke to you because I watched TV.
No, it just felt like a lot of the dialogue and just the conversations and everything that happened in that movie was a reflection of our podcast at the time. Mm. And, you know, Feast of Fun used to be one of the top 100 podcasts, one of the most listened to podcasts on iTunes in the height of its day, in its heyday. And a lot of screenwriters, a lot of Lady Gaga and you know, just RuPaul and a lot of people have drawn inspiration from what occurred on this show throughout the past decade of this show's history. And so it was weird, like, for example, on Saturday Night Live to watch
Weekend Update,
and see somebody being like word for word doing jokes that we did, that, you know, bad jokes that we came up with. There weren't even good ones. And to see Sex and the City 2, I was just sitting there and then going, holy shit, you know, this is the greatest film ever made. Give this Sex and the City 2 an Oscar. And everyone's like, you've lost your mind.
It's a terrible film.
It's ridiculous. It's offensive. It's dumb. And I absolutely love it.
I'm just surprised they just don't recast Kim Cattrall and get somebody else to do it.
Who can replace Kim Cattrall?
I don't know. Get Susan Sarandon to do it or something. And they have a budget. People want to see this.
Isn't there a hag with nice legs who can replace Kim Cattrall? You know the Kim Cattrall's most amazing moment of her whole life.
What is that?
When she gets banged. When she got fired from Star Trek for posing naked in her Vulcan ears and pair of pumps and wearing nothing else on the board of the
Enterprise. We need to get Enterprise. That verified.
That's the rumor. And I ask my friends who listen to this podcast and know her, and she would neither confirm nor deny it.
And Leonard Nimoy supposedly demanded the evidence of the photography evidence, and he destroyed it. And it was weird because then he went on to take photos of nude women.
Like, later in his life.
Plus-size nude women. And so you're kind of like, okay, it's okay for you to take photos of nude women, but Kim Cattrall can't take photos of herself naked. But also, too, she was on the set of Star Trek. But like what? In the future, they don't have sex?
Well, they don't have nudity in the future. Mm. Well, no, at that time when Kim Cattrall was on the filming the movie Star Trek, they were trying to sort of like reboot the franchise because there's money to be made in nostalgia. That's the reason why Will and Grace is back on television. Make no mistake. We want a paycheck. They got to get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be throwing no shade. I just want to get.
Well, you know, they've all got, like, everybody from Will and Grace has all gone on to do some different things and have different careers, but, like, it's nothing like being on a sitcom again, like a primetime sitcom. And it had, like, the biggest viewership for NBC for a comedy thing since 2013.
It was a huge show.
And so it's come back, you know, and it has the highest ratings that it's had ever.
It was a show that broke new ground by making gay characters and LGBT personalities be mainstream and be part of the central cast. It wasn't a special episode where somebody dies or, you know, like when the Golden Girls had gay characters, it was like, oh, that poor, sad, pitiful man. Mm-hmm. These were sexually active, romantic gay men who were living in New York City, living a glamorous life. And much like the Cosby Show sort of portrayed African Americans as affluent, as fun loving, as intelligent and warm. Will and Grace did that for LGBT people.
Did you like Will and Grace though when you first saw it?
Hell no.
Because when I first saw it,
I hated it.
It had to have been like 1998 or 1999. And it was before I met you and I was sitting in an apartment I used to live with my old roommate, Josh. And I was just like, part of me was just amazed. I'm like, I can't believe I'm sitting here watching a TV show that has two gay men in it, and like it's they're like normal and they're funny. Now Jack was kind of problematic to a lot of people, but you know what? I know a lot of theater queens, and Jack's not that far off. I mean, yes, he is stereotypical, but we all know some guys that are very much like that. And all characters on television are all hyped up a little bit too.
And at the time period, a lot of LGBT theater people would write their own material, which was very unusual at the time, and developed touring careers as entertainers who would perform in theaters. That's really the height of performance art and the whole idea of like telling your narrative and your story or doing a very LGBT focused queer ensemble theater. I'm thinking of the Lesbian Brothers was a really wonderful group of people.
Well, we just saw Coco Peru.
Coco Peru is part of that.
We just saw her perform this weekend, and part of her show is like, I'm going to give some of it away. Which she's going to be like, don't tell them that part. She's like,
don't talk about this. Don't talk about that.
But she said is like, you know, as a queer person in New York, it was hard to get some gigs because she was a flaming homo. And so she's just like, I'm going to do what I've been inspired by other people to do it. I'm just going to write my own shows.
And now Will and Grace is re-entering a culture that the show helped change by mainstreaming gay characters to prime time. So the first episode that we got to see sort of takes the Will and Grace to Washington, D.C. Trump is in office, and somehow they both find themselves in the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. Trump's gone somewhere else, and they're having a pillow fight over who is selling out more.
Right. Because you know, Will is chasing tails, some like congressman, and then and Grace is chasing like her dream of redoing the Oval Office.
And I think the show, I think is going to be amazing, and it's going to grow on people, and it's going to be fantastic. But there's so much history, so much intelligence, so much wisdom with the show that they're trying to pack it in. It's like when we're sort of like and you guys listen to the podcast, Mark and I get a little bit verklempt, agitated, because we have so much to say and so much to tell you that we can barely get the words out. The, certainly, like that tart, high strung quip delivery that Will and Grace has is cranked up to 11 to the point that it's a little bit hard to hear what they're saying, and the jokes are just rushing at you so fast that you don't have a chance to really let them sink in before the next one comes over. So I think as the series mellows and proceeds to sort of go into more matter of fact, everyday kind of circumstances, is really going to be something really exciting. And finally, I think the show, where the show needs to be, and embracing mature or aging LGBT characters.
Well, and I guess the next episode is they're going to do that. Will is going to be dating like a 23-year-old. And so there's going to have like a difference in there. So there's been a couple of different reviews out there. And then Jack, who I think, because he's always been kind of defined as being a twink, and now he's a twunk or a twas.
A twas.
A twas is what they call it. You know, he's like questioning, it's like, where do I fit into this kind of world that I'm no younger, this slim, you know, slap happy kind of guy. I'm almost 50 years old.
And that's a question Sean Hayes, the actor, is trying to answer too. So a lot of the topics of aging and fitting into a youth obsessed world and youth obsessed culture, especially with the internet, is going to be really interesting to see the series explore. And because the actors themselves are struggling with that stuff. So now it's personal.
Well, you know, he was probably struggling as a twink back in the day, you know, because here's Sean Hayes, who was a guy who was gay and he was out to most of his friends and his families and everything, but he couldn't be out publicly. We had heard from, you know, some people that listened to this podcast that he was actually contractually required to not come out because they would have all these quote unquote morality clauses into their contracts and even into syndication, I think.
Yeah.
And I think eventually they were just kind of like, oh, people are coming out. Because when did he actually come out? Like 2009, 11 or 12 or something like that. It was several years after. Because I can't believe Will and Grace went off the air in, what was it, 2007, I think, or 2006. And we were actually, we were podcasting.
We were in the middle of podcasting. Yeah. And I don't think we even like noticed.
No,
did
no,
we,
no.
Did we talk about it?
I did. I kind of did a quick search on the website, but I couldn't really find I was like, oh, I should go back and kind of listen to that and see. But, you know, the ending was kind of hokey, where it's like it took place, you know, 18 years into the future. Will and Grace each have their own kid, and then their kids end up like living in the same dorm together.
And they recreate sort of the relationship and their children.
Yeah. And so that was kind of a cute, you know, nod to when they did this new premiere, is they pretended like that never happened. They're like, okay, catch us up on everything. You got married. You're both divorced. You got divorced and everybody. And you're like, got it?
What about your kids? The kids? Nah, fuck it. Welcome back to Will and Grace. We need money. And, you know, who could blame it? I have to say, you know, especially with, and we're going to get later on this week, we're going to talking about Coco Peru's amazing, probably the height of her theatrical career, of her show that she's touring right now. Just this idea that, like, we are at a turning point right now as LGBT people to start embracing the wisdom, the intelligence of people who are over the age of 40. You know, as someone who's over the age of 40,
except
on Facebook and Grindr and Scruff. But I think it's actually really great because we're talking really about incorporating and embracing all the different flavors, all the different colors of our community. And I think it makes us healthier. It makes us better. You know, I'm just really disappointed and sad that TV shows and websites and, you know, just casting people, they don't want to touch anybody who's over the age of 22. And to me, it's really tragic because it's like, as audiences, we want to see really funny, smart, intelligent people perform and express. And you think about Coco Peru, this is somebody who, if you get a chance to see Coco Peru performing somewhere, go to it, because it's really something just... she's a living legend. Actors and comedians like Lily Tomlin and Liza Minnelli consider a source of inspiration.
She's going to retire. Yeah. So
she said,
well, yeah, she did say it. And she said X number of years, I'm going to retire. So
I don't want to live in a world without Coco Peru.
I don't want to live in a world without cooking with drag queens.
Oh my God.
So right
we're
now,
at a crossroads.
Yeah, we're at a crossroads, folks. Right now, we are at the time of this recording, we're at $6,619. We have to make $20,000 by October 19th at 9 p.m. Central. Can we do it?
That's 18 days away right now.
Yeah. And they say, you know, if you want to pledge, now's the time to do it. Only take you 3 minutes. Foster and I will pause the show for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And just go to Cooking with Drag Queens right now.
Cookingwithdragqueens.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then just there's a little green button and it says support this project.
Back all you need is you know, a couple of bucks. Like, you know, you spent money on that cocktail. Get yourself a beer instead. And spend the money that you did on cocktail. You believe in art. You believe in creativity. You believe in telling LGBT stories and really like exploring the world of culinary creativity and showbiz dazzling glitter wonder that Cooking with Drag Queens and Feast of Fun has. We're planning to, with this money, to expand the series, to make it grow, to make it evolve into something much bigger than what it is. But we can't do it without your support. I know right now there's a lot of crises and issues fighting for our attention, valid, important issues. And we do this podcast to, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. We do this podcast as a way to bring our community together, to embrace a wide variety of people and ideas, but we can't do it without your financial support. I know right now, if every person who's listening to the show just gave $3, we could get funded for a really glorious brand new Cooking with Drag Queens and, you know, revamping Feast of Fun's video enterprise on YouTube, on social media. We're planning to expand video into more places and take the series in exciting ways that you guys have not seen yet before. We're sort of gonna, you know, put Cooking on Drag Queens on estrogen and make it grow and expand and blossom, but we can't do it without your financial support. So please, if you're thinking about supporting Cooking with Drag Queens, if you're saying, I'm gonna get around to it, now's the time to do it.
Right.
If you don't do it now, the consequences, we may not be around tomorrow. We may not be able around to tell these stories, to do these shows that we know you love. We know you guys love it because you've been supporting us and with us for so long. Now is the time. Go to cookingwithdragqueens.com.
And I want to remind people, too, is, you know, Feast of Fun is a podcast, and we also produce all this web content, too. And it's, you know, it's one thing supports the other. So maybe you're not such a fan of the videos, but you really love the podcast. By supporting with Cooking with Drag Queens, you are actually helping the podcast as well. And if you want to continue to hear shows, if you want to continue to watch the videos, that's the best way to support us right now. This is our time of need. We don't really do a lot of fundraisers on here. You know, we remind people to subscribe. We tell people the best way to support the podcast is to become a Plus member. But right now, it's critical that you support Cooking with Drag Queens, or the project not only won't get made, but we'll have to figure out other sources of revenue as well.
Well, it's about, you know, winding things down as opposed to ramping things up.
Yes.
And honey, are you ready to take it to the next level? I know I am.
And we know that there are a lot of crises, and there's no reason why you can't, you know, support Feast of Fun and support other things that are near and dear to your heart.
That's what happens when you have Republicans in power.
Right.
When you have fascists and conservatives in charge attacking our community, the arts dies, creativity dies. Our ability to tell our own stories and come together as a community is really compromised because we're so busy fighting and defending ourselves. Let's read this letter about one of our dear listeners in Australia right now, where they're fighting the fight of their lives for marriage equality, something that we in here in the United States thought we would never have. I never thought that I would be able to legally marry the man I love. And that was just a dream for another lifetime, another world. And somehow now it's our reality.
It is.
And it happened because a wide variety of people like you, decided to take action and give a small amount of money to one a cause or another, to Cooking with Drag Queens, to Feast of Fun, to your local civil rights organizations. It's because you decided to participate, and not just be a casual observer.
Mm-hmm. So I won't say his name because it's kind of an unusual name, but he's been a subscriber for a number of years. We'll just call him S. So he writes, Dear Fausto and Mark, I'm writing to you because I'd really like your advice, please. Some personal advice, but very important for a lot of people, I think. Australia is currently undergoing a very hurtful phase of discussing marriage equality reform, which has unleashed a storm of hate propaganda, no surprise, from so-called Christian groups. In the vein of what happened in Ireland, our idiotic and untalented politicians, conservative fucktards, of course, have initiated a kind of public vote. Sadly, it's all a political farce because the results of the yes-no poll is only advisory and non-binding. This I didn't know. I didn't know that, did you? It was a political time-wasting tactic so they could avoid bringing the matter to a head. Appeasing certain right wingers. There's been a lot of TV ads by both yes and no campaigners. The U.S. went through marriage reform recently, and no doubt you had to endure a lot of hateful propaganda. It's okay to just say chin up, but watching hateful ads on TV by no campaigners makes me feel hurt, angry, and all worked up. It's really hard to cope with. Friends are sending love and support as well as their condolences that we're being subjected to this. But to actually live with this daily really weighs heavily. I feel agitated. I feel sometimes a bit violent and incredibly bitter. How can we stop ourselves from falling into a pit of hatred? Every time I write to try a complaint letter, I just get worked up for the worse. I've had thought someone of my age, 44, would be able to cope, but I'm still finding it hard. Imagine what it's like for an LGBT kid. What is your advice, please, to Australian LGBT people like me to help us get through this time?
That is a fantastic question to ask.
Right.
And the fact that you're taking so much energy and thought into writing this beautiful letter means, I'm guessing, you're most likely pretty active and already doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, trust that you are making things better just by asking these questions and taking actions. Mm-hmm. My years, Mark and I both have dealt with the public in one way or another in our different jobs throughout our lives. And really, I think in fighting for civil rights is really sometimes an issue of customer service. Mm. One thing I've observed in my years in dealing with the public is that when somebody knows they don't deserve what they're asking for, they start to bombard you with a litany of irrational arguments. Mm-hmm. And that happens because on some deep level, these Christian conservatives know they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's why they turn this into a maddening, disorienting fight. The idea is to just get you to feel powerless.
To bamboozle you. To get you your mind so scattered that you don't know which end is up.
There's a lot of studies that are done that hearing someone's negativity, hearing someone's complaints and problems makes you dumber. But if you're able to take action and find some sort of creative solution, you're more intelligent because of it. Think about that. So if you're hearing somebody complain or something negative, it kind of stuns you and makes you kind of go inside and cave in. But break it into one simple action that you can do today and take that action, you're actually better off, you're more optimistic, and you're more intelligent as a consequence of that. So any action that you take is a step forward. Focus on solutions. And I think, you know, sort of just even educating people in the fact that this is not necessary. This is kind of a bit of a scam.
Well, yeah, it's totally a scam.
On both sides.
It is a scam, and I've done some reading on it, and there's talk of, like, these ads don't have to have any kind of truth to them whatsoever. I mean, no. They have had some ads denied, but, like, some of them, they can just tell outrageous lies, and they're allowed to get away with it. And because they say it's part of the political discourse.
Well, if you think about social media, Twitter and Facebook do not have to disclose who pays for political campaigns the way television or newspapers do. And, you know, if right now, a lot of democracies or progressive nations or progressive communities are struggling under the weight of oligarchs. Oligarchs is a fancy word for rich mobsters around the world who are using our own technology, our own tools of communication against us. Mm. And so you can guarantee that just because Russia is trying to take over the Republican Party or has taken over the Republican Party and is using us to divide us against each other, you don't think that that's also happening in Australia? You better believe it. And you better believe that the reason that Australia is wasting all this energy and money in find what should be an obvious thing
and is will come to fruition someday.
Inevitably will yes. happen. It's a tactic to waste your energy mm-hmm. and your money and your resources from instead of funding, say, the arts.
Right. And this is part of the reason why, you understand that. You say that it's a total time waster, and that's what it is. Because they know that, like, once you have marriage equality, like we have now, Aaron, you're going to focus on other rights. You're going to be like, what's next? How next do we improve society?
It's about building your community. Mm-hmm. The reason why arts funding matters mm-hmm. is because it builds communities. It makes places worth living. Mm-hmm. It makes yeah. people want to move to those places and put in energy into building homes and into cleaning the streets and making life worth living. And when you start destroying the very reason why people enjoy living in a community, mm-hmm. you're destroying that community from within. And so that's why these kind of things are interconnected.
Right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is like when you're dealing with something like this is you often feel isolated. You feel alone. You're like, it's me against the world. But, you know, there's a lot of LGBT people in Australia. There's a lot of people who are allies. And I'm sure you have friends. And it's just like sometimes, you know, it sounds corny, but just spending time with people that you love or doing something constructive with them can remarkably change your outlook on the whole thing.
That's what we've been all about all this year is mm-hmm. Feast of Fun. You know, we came up with a fake holiday, but I guess it's real now. Glitter Day. Glitter yeah. Day is sort of like, Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa. It happens the second Saturday of January. And it's a day to do whatever the hell you feel mm-hmm. like it. But the important thing about Glitter Day is that you celebrate it with people you care about. Mm. Or masturbate alone in your bedroom with a bottle of poppers. There's no wrong way to celebrate. It's a mm. day to do what feels mm. right for you. And we sort of started as a joke, but I think, you know, self-care is really important. And,
especially like when you, after those holidays and stuff yeah. like that, you'll have to deal with sometimes your hateful families. You're just like, I just need to be, you know, glittery.
if watching old episodes of Will and Grace, mm-hmm. I've been binge watching Family Affair on Amazon Prime.
Why?
Because it's a cute. It's basically like the dark version of Brady Bunch, mm. right? So a lot of those sitcoms with the Brady Bunch around that time period, Sherwood Schwartz mm-hmm. produced, right, had this idea of isolating the protagonists in some way or another. And when there were children involved, there was always a death, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about the Brady Bunch, those kids both lost a mom and a dad. Mm-hmm. They're dead.
Yeah.
And what do their parents do? Hook up with somebody else and bang away, you know.
Yeah.
But they never had any kids, if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
Family
Mr.
Affair
Brady was gay.
Yeah, well, in real life, yeah. the actor who played him, but the character mm-hmm. Was heterosexual. A Family Affair starts off really dark. These twins and their older sister, Buffy, Jody, and Susie, mm-hmm. They're all orphans, and they somehow wind up in their rich Uncle Bill's apartment, a New York bachelor, who's played by the dad from The Parent Trap. Mm-hmm. And then there's a campy gay butler who's
Mr.
like,
French.
Mr. French, I hate children. Oh, God, these children. Children are monsters. Children do, you know. So it's wonderfully dark, hilarious, and weird, and at the same time, adorable. Little Johnny Whitaker from Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
Aww.
As a little baby boy, he's just like, he's an angel.
He's so goddamn cute.
So cute.
But Buffy grew up to hate him in real life.
So his twin sister, she suffered from drugs and alcohol addiction. She died very young. Oh. And
was
so
that
the actress,
Buffy was the young one.
There's Jody, Buffy, and Susie.
Okay.
So Susie, the actress who played Susie, grew up to sort of be paired off with Johnny Whitaker, and they started touring around.
Mm-hmm.
And Oprah decided to, you know, so this is what happened.
Kind of thing.
Johnny Whitaker was a huge star because of Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. He had a singing, a music career. He was a solo act. And festivals try to pair him off with the actress who played Susie, the older sister, and try to make people confused, thinking that she was his twin sister from the series. Mm-hmm. And he was having none of that. So he would like fight against getting booked with her. And she didn't like that either. Mm. So Oprah bamboozled the actress who played Susie, and they had a surprise meeting with Johnny Whitaker and the actress who played Susie at her home. And mm-hmm. she's like,
and she let him have it.
She let him have it.
But they edited it out, right? Yeah. And so she actually, like, they showed this thing where it seemed like it was this nice reunion, and she's just like,
You're an asshole. Johnny Whitaker is a total jerk. And so she went on YouTube and mm-hmm. posted it as this long comment. Mm-hmm. So to clarify, it was Kathy Garver who played Sissy and Anissa Jones who played Buffy, the little girl. She died as a teenager. And Johnny Whitaker played Jody, the little redhead boy. And he grew up to be an asshole. And Sebastian Cabot played Mr. French, who hated children.
I think it's Sebastian Cabot.
Sebastian Cabot. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. And Brian Keith, you know, he's daddy realness. So there's a really fun campy gay quality to Family Affair, and the theme song to Family Affair was the guy who does the Champagne Hour, the
Lawrence Welk.
Lawrence Welk was the conductor for it, and it was composed by Duvall, who also composed the Brady Bunch theme song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's a story.
How did we start talking about the family?
You know, this show is really about looking back at our past and trying to understand our future, you know, and really, like, here's an interesting thing. Colin Kaepernick, am I pronouncing his name right? Refusal to stand during the Star Spangled Banner, which Trump idiotically is turning into this big thing.
Oh, yeah. They don't want him to kneel. Locking arms is okay. You know, they could sit down, they could lay down, just don't kneel.
So his refusal to stand to kneel is only the latest chapter in the anthem's long polarizing history. So the Star Spangled Banner was originally written as a dinner theater song by the Anacreontic Society as the Anacreontic theme, was it?
What?
In 1771, it was a broadside ballad, which meant that it was a melody that they would attach different lyrics to talk about current events. The Anacreontic Society was a gentleman's music and dinner club where amateur musicians and thought leaders and philosophers and poets would go together and have a swell time getting drunk and having delicious food. And at the end of the meal, they would read poetry and perform and have these wonderful times.
People used to like self-entertain.
Yeah. And it sounded like, I mean, reading about it, it sounded fantastic. I wish I would have, you know, that was Feast of Fun in its origins, was the idea of having people together to gather for food and theater and music and fun.
And then you take like old songs and tunes that you know and just kind of rewrite new lyrics for it to kind of fit the occasion. And that's where the Star Spangled Banner came from, an old tune, right?
And so there were versions that supported the French Revolution. There was versions that were like talking about John Adams, and because John Adams was a very discussed figure at the time. The Star Spangled Banner was one time rewritten to talk about slavery. This is one of the lyrics that the one version had at the end. It said, "The Star Spangled Banner at half mast shall wave over the deathbed of freedom on the home of the slave." And this is long before the United States adopted it as its official theme song. It's anthem in 1931. Mm-hmm. Since then, in the 1968 Olympics, it was used as a protest. Jimi Hendrix in 1969, most famously, he performed it
a classic
at Woodstock. And even a decade ago, the radical cheerleaders and a lot of like AIDS activist groups and feminist activist groups have for years rewritten this song to talk about contemporary events or political protests. I just want to read you, may I sing it a little bit with my raspy voice. So this is the Radical Cheerleaders. Oh, say can you see by the TV's blue light where democracy failed and Wall Street is scheming. The jail stripes and iron bars left the ghettos in scars. From our sofas we watched as the nation was screaming and the missiles' red glare, Star Wars nukes in the air. That's a 80s reference there. If you're not rich and white, then your rights are stripped bare. Oh, say that blood splattered dollar still reigns in the land of corporate greed and the home of the slave. Girl.
Okay.
So the idea, the point
political
is...
political commentary.
It's political commentary is the most American thing. Like Weird Al Yankovic takes, you know, pop songs and makes them about something else. That's what the Star Spangled Banner ultimately is about.
But right now we're living in that kind of situation where we're, in many ways, we're living under a fascist regime where it's like we're having this forced patriotism. And do you remember that kid, like last year, he was like Champaign Urbana and he burnt the flag and they came and arrested him.
Yeah.
Well, did he win? Of course he won, because you're allowed to burn a flag in this country if you want to.
Not burning the flag is un-American. Yeah. Burning the flag is American.
And so he actually won. The ACLU fought for him and he won like $15,000 and then an additional $20,000 in legal fees in the settlement. And the thing is too, and like people are kind of, I've been reading a blog entry recently about we're surprised at how much patriotism there is surrounding the flag, because when the United States adopted this flag, they didn't have an emotional sense towards it. They just kind of came up with a flag originally because they needed a flag to put on a ship so you could identify it. Like, this is an American ship, put a flag on it. You know, because originally we had a lot of different versions of the American flag, you know, red, white, and blue stripes and stuff, but like different generals had their own version of the American flag during the American, you know, Revolution. Different states had their own version, and so they eventually the Congress is like, we need one version, and put it there. And then the whole thing that we're like, we're worshiping it now as this thing, it's just kind of like they would be shocked that we'd be so in love with this flag like that.
Well, and it's about distracting. It's about getting rich.
Yeah.
It's about taking something they know they don't deserve to take.
Right. And it's also like this forced patriotism. Like, you can't really force somebody to be patriotic necessarily. Maybe you can kind of convince some people to do it. But a fascist regime is going to try to do that because it must have some kind of psychological effect on people.
And I think, you know, fascism is a immature, irrational human reaction to pain and suffering, is about politicizing your own isolation. And in some ways, you know, Donald Trump is a victim of his circumstances and he is wanting to make the world burn. He wants to make other people suffer, and he's going to, you know, this man is going to die soon because he's in horrible shape.
Well, but
he can't die soon enough.
Old white people are hard to kill.
They are. Is Donald Trump strike you as a person who's happy? He's a miserable fuck. Mm-hmm. He is in a horrible job. He is surrounded by people who hate his guts. Mm-hmm. The country hates him. He understands that people despise and loathe them. And the fact that he can only become friends with Nazi right-wing fucks is horrifying, because he's a Nazi right-wing fuck himself. You know, think about this. It's like the humanitarian crisis that's happening in Puerto Rico and the slow response from Washington, as Larry LaFontaine, Larry Lola von Miramar posted on Facebook, it's a genocide by not just the Trump administration, but by the Republicans. And yet at the same time, as Cervantes one time said, no hay mal de que no bien no venga. There is no evil that no good can come from. And what's interesting is that people, when a crisis like this happens, people stand back and ask themselves, what's the big picture? How can we unify as a society? Mm-hmm. When you're in a crisis mode, the best thing that you can do is reach out to your neighbors, to your community, and come together. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is the wake-up call across the world to lift the Jones Act, for example, for Puerto Rico to unify politically. Most Americans have no idea that Puerto Rico is part of the United States. People think that I'm a foreign citizen. They think I emigrated from Puerto Rico to mm-hmm. Chicago, what makes as much sense as Mark emigrated from Pennsylvania to Chicago. And a poll, this is a brand new poll mm-hmm. that just was taken a couple of years ago of adults found that 54% of Americans, about half of them, think that Puerto Ricans are foreign citizens. They're from China, mm-hmm. Japan, Puerto Rico. It's a foreign country. And they don't think of us as U.S. citizens. And now get this, 80% of Americans who know Puerto Ricans are citizens of the United States support aid, but only 40% who believe that Puerto Ricans are foreign people do not. They're mm-hmm. like, let Puerto Rico take care of its own people. I'm like, Puerto Rico is part of the United States. In fact, in times that as an adult throughout my life, any time that I've ever had to deal with banks or organizations or government bureaucracies, mm-hmm. time and time again, they just look at me and they say, I'm sorry, we don't deal with foreign people, you know, and I'm like,
foreign banks
or whatever. And I'm just like, I'm a United States mm-hmm. citizen. I have a United States mm-hmm. passport. Puerto Rico is part of the United States. And they just look at me like, no, it's not. And I'm just like, go read Wikipedia mm-hmm. and stop arguing with me. It's a deep level of institutionalized mm-hmm. racism and bigotry.
For sure. And that's part of the reason why Trump has been slow to respond, because he knows that it plays well to his base, who are prejudiced against Latinos. Are you a Latino or Hispanic? I always forget which.
It's about everything.
Okay. Yes. I always forget because I feel like is one thing and one is another. I don't know.
Well, Latino is a term that, or Latinx now mm-hmm. is a term to mm-hmm. sort of embrace people from all around the world mm-hmm. who come from a Spanish Portuguese right. heritage.
And so his slow response is a way to kind of like play, to make the his racist base very happy, because they're just like, huh, he doesn't care about Puerto Rico, who does, ha ha ha. And so they do that. But recently, this past weekend, he was giving out at his golf resort a trophy. And he was just like, oh, here's your trophy, and let's honor the people of Puerto Rico who have gone through like these terrible hurricanes right now. And people are just kind of like, you don't send very much aid. You're not very helpful. But like, you think like, hey, here's a trophy. Let's talk about Puerto Rico. People are saying it's his let them eat cake moment.
Well, Trump is really superficial and immature. And, mm-hmm. He focuses on things like ratings. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. With the football thing, it's like he's like the low ratings. He doesn't think about like issues. He doesn't think about quality of life.
Yeah. And it's like when he's getting critiqued by the mayor of San Juan, he's basically saying, oh, the Democrats told her to be nasty. And you're like, what?
Because women are nasty.
Because women are nasty.
Yeah. He never says the word nasty to refer to men. Mm-hmm. He uses it to refer to women.
Yeah. To nasty women. And so, it's ridiculous and it's appalling. And the more I'm reading about what's happening there, and from talking to some people, I've been chatting with one guy who's actually living there, and he said the thing that really surprised him the most after this hurricane is the amount of iguanas that are everywhere, because iguanas are an invasive species in Puerto Rico. They're mm-hmm. not native, and we've been down and we've seen a few, but because so many trees are down, because a lot of them are tree dwelling, and that they're just like everywhere. And he's just like, we're considering capturing some of them and eating them because we don't have meat. Now, Puerto Ricans are smart and savvy people. A lot of them collect water, so that when the hurricane happens, they do have a stash.
And
they
Your
dad had there wasn't even one expected, and he had a lot of water.
He would have pretty much every wall in his kitchen had jugs mm-hmm. of water stored in case mm-hmm. there was a hurricane. I'm like, It's April. There's no hurricane. It's not hurricanes.
But also, too, yeah. You know, so he's living off of like cereal and canned foods. But and he said, I had a hamburger the other day. And I was just like, how'd you get a hamburger? I guess somebody must have had like a generator with a freezer. And he's like, it's the first meat I've eaten. And he's like, we've been killing these iguanas because there's so many of them everywhere. And again, they are an invasive species. But it's just, I'm like, you know what? Cook it. It's, you know, they say it tastes like chicken.
Yeah, you know, I started listening to Mark Anthony's cover of the song Preciosa.
And explain to the listeners.
It's kind of like, you know, America the Beautiful. You know, Puerto Rico has an unofficial anthem, just like America the Beautiful is an unofficial anthem of the United States. And it's really talking about how, you know, I know about the beauty. Precious means also the not just. It translates to gorgeous, right? About the sexuality of the women, but also the beauty of the land and our people and our ability to overcome tyranny, no matter where it comes from, and our ability to come together and overcome it with black evil. He says, no matter how awful the tyrant treats you, we can overcome this and sing beautiful songs that the bards sing about your history.
It was also telling me that it could be months before most of the island even gets electricity back.
And we shall overcome this. You know, I think Puerto Rico's, and I hope this doesn't come across as insensitive, our biggest struggle right now is overcoming the Trump administration and the Republican racism, prejudice that is directed against us. This Jones Act, and this is a, you know,
explain to the listeners out there what the Jones Act
is. The Jones Act is until, you know, it was basically passed to prevent boats from shipping from and to and forth from Puerto Rico. It's an antiquated protectionist law that was driven up costs and crippled Puerto Rico's economy, says Senator John McCain himself. He's like the one, you know, few sensible Republican voices in an ocean of madness. The Jones Act is really being pushed by air transport lobbies and American shipping lobbies who want to keep it because it makes them richer. It basically keeps the money away from Puerto Rico to be able to control its own shipping.
Because everything that comes to Puerto Rico must come from mainland United States
and from American ships and American mainland ships and shipping companies.
Whereas like when you look at Puerto Rico on the map, it's actually closer to South America than it is to North America.
Correct.
And they could probably get a ton of products very cheaply from South America.
So other boats can land on Puerto Rico, but the issue is that you can't. Basically, Puerto Rico became a rich port. That's what its name means, right? Because of its geographic location, it cripples Puerto Rico's function and ability, natural ability to be this port, international port where boats and ships can land and drop things off and move on in an efficient manner. And so what it does, it wastes fuel because it forces shipping and transportation to take alternate routes that exclude Puerto Rico economically. So the Jones Act, which initially was started as a way to sort of as a response to World War One, you know, this is not that old. Actually, it was started in the 30s. Ultimately, became a crippling effect on the Puerto Rican economy that has grown and grown over the years until this insurmountable act. If they say like, well, Puerto Rico can't pay its bills back. And I'm like, well, yeah, because you basically passed this law that has crippled our economy decade after decade, and things just get worse and worse and worse. It all adds up. And so if you're, you know, any politician who's serious about rebuilding Puerto Rico's economy that doesn't talk about lifting the Jones Act is full of shit. And part of this is like, you're like, I'm in Chicago, I'm in LA, I'm in New York. What does it matter? Chances are because Puerto Rico is part of the United States. This is part of your economy. This is part of your livelihood. And it affects you in really deep, meaningful ways.
And there's more Puerto Ricans living in the continental United States right now, too, than are actually living on the island. And those people vote, and they're in places like Florida.
I'm hoping that every Puerto Rican who voted for Trump, every Republican Puerto Rican, is taking a long, hard look in the mirror and asking themselves some difficult questions right now. And that's what I'm hoping. This is the wake up call. Mm. This is for Puerto Rico, for us to come together as a heritage and put pressure on the United States for us to unify politically and to stop thinking of ourselves as a divisive pro statehood or pro independence or pro commonwealth, but we are pro Puerto Rico, pro Americans. We are American citizens. Right now we are American citizens and we will stay that way. And we have overcome some horrific, nasty, tyrannous things. This ain't the first time at the rodeo, honey. And you better believe it, honey. Puerto Rican drag queens are some of the fiercest ones. It's because the sangre taína flows in our veins, and it's time to fight.
When you're dealing with a broken heart, you make art.
And some of the most beautiful songs and beautiful music and theater comes from Puerto Rico. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Hamilton, honey. We're bringing it full circle to you today.
We have Mark Anthony and J-Lo.
Yes. Some of that. Me.
La
and
Lupe.
You.
Do you know who La Lupe is?
You don't know who La Lupe is? Google it.
Well, good news. The Cher Show is the new musical based on Cher's life is coming to Chicago. It's going to premiere here next June. It'll be here for 5 weeks, and then it's going to go off to Broadway. It's going to be one of those, what they call it, a jukebox musical. So it's going to be songs from Cher's repertoire over the years, and it's going to be done in three acts, I guess, because it's going to be three different women playing Cher over the span of her lifetime. I don't know why they just didn't pick one woman, because like Cher has only been playing Cher her whole life.
And she's got a lot of plastic surgery. She pretty much looks the same whole last, you know? All three decades, you know?
Well, she can do a five-minute plank, you know?
Cher?
Cher is 72 years old. Don't you remember when she got that award? She's like, I'm 72 and I can do a five-minute plank.
I can't do a one-minute plank, you know? Barely. If it's, I could turn back time.
That's the key. It's like, you want to be young, you got to learn to do those planks. You got to do those exercises. Dancers, you know, they can move. They've got bodies and those bodies move, and that movement keeps you alive.
So the musical really is going to sort of be campy and sort of focusing on that Bob Mackie retro sensibility of the Cher Show. Probably Tina Turner is going to be making an appearance, and it's going to be fun.
It was going to be called Cher the Musical, but they decided to do it as a Cher Show, and it is going to be like her TV show back in the day.
Shame, you know? Shame, shame, shame on you if you can't dance too.
It's got I Got You Babe, Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves, Take Me Home, Believe, If I Could Turn Back Time. I wonder if they'll do like Half Breed, because that's kind of probably her most controversial song.
My favorite Cher cover is Tina Turner and
Kate Smith
did a Beatles medley
on the Cher Show.
That's on YouTube. You guys can Google it.
It's crazy.
One of the most insane things on the internet. And you know, Kate Smith has this look of, she just looks like she just gave up.
Well, she's so matronly looking at it, though, too, and kind of like, what's going on here? But the thing is,
so who's
like,
Kate Smith?
Kate Smith, she was a singer. She had done some acting and stuff, I believe, in the 40s and 50s. And she had a huge hit with some God Bless America.
God Bless America.
And I think some other song about like Moonlight, you know, and people just they adored her for that. And she kind of struck me as a dyke.
She was very sexually nonconforming, gender and sexually nonconforming. She's a tough broad.
You know,
she is wearing this very heavy gown, and Tina and Cher are in these tight little skinny little outfits, all designed by Bob Mackie, and Ike Turner and the Ike Turner Band are surrounding them with Tim Conway dressed up as Napoleon for some reason, and they're all doing these switching from one Beatles song to another, and then Kate Smith comes up and she's like, hey, Jude, don't take it bad, sing a sad song. And then Tina Turner's like, and make it better. You know, it's so wonderfully nuts.
And Cher and Tina keep looking at each other and be like, who is this big lady?
Don't know what's going on either.
They kind of are just like, oh, there was some, if I ever meet Cher, I have to talk to her about that. I'd be like, what was going on in your mind?
That's not going to be part of the musical. Wish it was.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, when I heard The Color Purple was going to be made to a musical, they should have been like, You show is ugly, Miss Seeley. That should have been a song. Mm-hmm. You show is ugly. You show Miss Seeley. You show is ugly. You know, that should have been a song, but it wasn't.
You know what? I'm sure tickets are going to go fast for that. Only 5 weeks here. So,
girl, get me on the list. You know, get me on the list.
Oh my God. I got to see it. If I can get an interview with Cher about it, I would just die.
She's my number one guest I've ever wanted to have on this podcast is Cher.
Oh, and you know who her new friend is on Twitter?
Who?
Of all the people you know who caused the most kerfuffles on Twitter, who would that be?
Oh, geez. It's a drag queen. It's a drag. Is it Peaches Christ?
No. I don't think Peaches.
Lady Bunny?
No.
Violet Chachki?
Who is the most
combative
on Twitter that you know?
Trinity the Tuck Taylor?
It's not a drag queen.
Oh, who is that?
Parker Malloy.
Ooh,
Parker. Let me
that's
find
a name it. We haven't heard in a while.
That is a name we haven't heard in a while.
Parker Malloy, also known as.
I chat with her now and then, especially like on trans issues. I'm just like, hey, what's up on this? Because you know she's a thought leader.
Parker Malloy was the journalist who sort of initiated the conversation about Shemale Gate on RuPaul's Drag Race, and eventually Alaska Thunderfuck made a video where Parker gets shot. And of course, a lot of people were sort of horrified by that. And then Alaska and Parker on the podcast apologized to each other and kissed and made up.
Yeah. And so, and that was the end of Shemale Gate, and nobody ever talked about it again. So, you know, Donald Trump said being nice to Rocket Man, meaning, you know, Kim Jong-un in Korea, hasn't worked in 25 years. Why would it work now? Clinton failed, Bush failed, and Obama failed. I won't fail. And so Parker's tweets, he's doing that thing again where he thinks Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il are the same person, you know, which they're not. And then Cher wrote, I'm not really sure. Oh, she has a little B and then like the little emoji for a B and says, because Trump accomplishes nothing. She's responding to Parker.
Yeah.
Because Trump accomplishes nothing. His tantrums are meant to take our minds off what he is doing, deconstructing America, ripping it apart, dividing us. You know?
Amen, sisters.
Yes, amen. So we need to pull it together.
We need to come together, you know? And part of it is like, I know there's a lot of justified causes to fight over. And certainly, you know, these famous drag queens that are getting on television, Violet Chachki and Nina Bonina Brown, you know, they're standing in front of their social media. They're hurt. They have been attacked unjustly, and they have every right to be like, what is it? Nina Bonina Brown said, fuck Mexico.
Well, I guess she also said, like, people should die in an earthquake or something. She gets a lot of death threats from fans of Valentina. Like, literally, like, people are, like, using the N-word saying die. And so, you know, she's
and
taking
why Valentina fans are attacking her?
Well, I'm not really sure exactly why.
Maybe because they were both up for elimination and Valentina went home.
I think so, yeah. I think that's what it was. So there's a lot of anger there towards her and, you know, a lot of racism because, you know, just because you're Mexican or you're a fan of Valentina doesn't mean you can't be racist. And so
racism doesn't discriminate.
No, it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
And so so anyway, she said some stuff, and so people are calling her a racist. And it's kind of like, yeah, it's not cool to say people should die in an earthquake or anything like that. But it's also not cool to get threatened by a lot of people. And some, you know, it's a mob mentality. So it's a lot of people gunning for you. And it's like, yeah, it would be great if you could just step back and be like, hey, it's no big deal. But then also, too, we're talking about Nina Bonina Brown, who we know has some issues.
Like, what kind of issues?
Well, I think she's got some, you know, I think she's talked about it, right? That she has some kind of, like, you know, depression or anxiety.
It's isolation, I think. Part of it is when you are a full-time creative person and all your income is coming from these creative gigs, it's very isolating when you don't have, like, a life partner. You don't have a community of other artists to collaborate with. And drag inherently is very lonely sometimes. Mm. These queens get in an airplane. They may not be able to afford an assistant to travel with mm-hmm. them. They get to these gigs. They perform. They do these meet and greets. And they're just doing it day after day after day. And it can be great money, but it also can be very lonely. Yeah. And so when the internet, somebody on the internet decides to attack you, you know, like we've been attacked many times by many different kind of people.
But we have each other.
But we have each other. We have
a community of listeners
and a community of guests. You know, mm-hmm. it's like the people that come on the show, we commiserate with them and we talk about it. And, you know, like Vivacious is to me, like, you know, in a lot of ways, my therapist. I'm mm-hmm. her therapist. Mm-hmm. And we talk about a lot of these things. And one of the core things is like, it's hard to navigate with that. And mm-hmm. it's easy with pain, with isolation mm-hmm. to escalate mm-hmm. that. And Violet Tchotchke most recently. Well,
she was just in France and she tweeted, I was just physically dragged out of Le Depot in Paris for not being mask presenting enough. I'm in shock and disgusted. Fuck the French. So, and then she also posted a video where she's outside of this club saying I was dragged out by four people because, you know, she went to visit friends there who were performing and they had some kind of fashion thing. And then they have a separate room, which is kind of like a sex party, I guess, or something like that. You know, like a lot of gay clubs do in the basement or another room. And I guess she tried to get in there and they were just like, no. And so she's just like,
I was, fuck that club for kicking her out because it's like, you know, I'm sure she wasn't the freakiest person mm-hmm. in the room.
No, I'm sure she probably wasn't, you know, but it's also too, you know, that's also, you know, I hate to say there's two sides of the story because it's not, this is her version of what happened, but also too, it was like, I don't know what those clubs' rules are. I don't know how these things go down. I don't know how she treated people. Because, you know, if you talk to any of the girls that she was on season her with, they were like, I'd throw her out too, you know, maybe. And I can name the names of the people who would say that,
but we but I won't, but you know who they
but
are.
But no, and it's always, you know, and it's terrible when a whole, you know, a whole club of people don't want to have sex with you.
I think, and I've met Violet Tchotchke in person and she's lovely and very, well-mannered and intelligent. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that she would be somebody who would be instigating mm-hmm. in that situation. I'm also somebody who's been kicked out of back rooms for dressing up in drag. From watching the video, she wasn't wearing much of a costume. She just had a little bit of makeup on mm-hmm. her face.
Yeah.
And this club, you know, Homo Depot, as I call it in France, is a shithole. This place is...
How do you know it's a shithole?
I went on their Facebook page and started looking at pictures and videos of their
parties. Well, the night was called La Toilette, so I guess you're right.
It's a toilet night. They have parties that call the gorillas. Every gorilla come to, you know... It's a mess. It's a hot mess. And part of it is like...
You don't really know what you're talking about.
I'm just reacting to what I've seen. All right. You know, obviously, I've not been there.
Yeah.
But I know what the mindset behind these kind of clubs and this kind of like weird underground elitism mm-hmm. and this the idea is like if you don't fit into our little tight definition of what masculinity sure. is, you're out of here, sister.
Because you've been kicked out of the back room with the Eagle because you were in drag before, right?
Yeah, and Victoria Lamar and I were like, let's go to the back, and we were a little bit tipsy, and we were, you know, I was wearing a wedding gown, a blonde wig, mm-hmm. and lots of makeup, mm-hmm. and we just went back there, and they're mm-hmm. like, you got to get out of here. Yeah.
And you know, I've gone to like the Jackhammer or you know other clubs, and you know, I love going there. And there's been times where it's just like when you go down in the basement, they're like, hey, you know, you have to be in your underwear. And I'm just like, you know, I don't necessarily feel like I have to be in my underwear tonight. So I just don't go in there.
And so the cause is just. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I have a lot of mixed feelings because I'm like, I'm ready to light a torch. Mm-hmm. And go to Homo Depot and burn the place down. Yeah. At the same time, this is exactly mm-hmm. what right-wingers, what mm-hmm. Russian oligarchs want to happen, mm. is us fighting with each other mm. and dividing each mm-hmm. other. So shame on Homo Le Depot mm-hmm. for creating a divisive situation and not de-escalating it by addressing it or mm-hmm. inviting Violet Tchotchke to, you know, a conversation about this mm-hmm. and really, you know, the way they kicked her out and they just kind of like kicked her to the curb and didn't give her her jacket or her belongings back to her is really ugly. And I think any bar that does that kind of thing deserves to be humiliated and you know, attacked on social media. At the same time, you know, lynch mobs or angry mobs of any kind, even when the justice on social media is bringing us to the same level as Trump, as these right wingers, as these alt-right Nazi skinhead jerks. And we need to think about really deeply about how we handle conflict and we resolve in order to make the world a better place. And I don't necessarily think this is the best solution. So
what are you saying?
I'm just
taking it to social media like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, taking it to social media. Well, you know, it's the whole thing with monkey shame that queen from Dracula season.
KKK.
I think she has KKK in her name, isn't she?
It's only two K's. Two but K's. A lot of people like to write it with a three. Listen, that's...
But that's the queen from Dracula, and she had gotten into a fight with another queen, Soju.
Asian queen.
And since then, they've apologized to each other and made amends. And I think... You know, social media is really easy to escalate fights and to people not meet face to face and talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're an LGBT business, if you're an LGBT artist, your artistry is a business too. You're trying to pay your bills. The best thing you can do is have a conversation face to face with that other organization. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't resolve itself, then turn to civil rights, to activism to address your grievances.
Right.
Not as a first response.
Well, and also, too, it's kind of like sometimes these things, it's this mob mentality. It's like the easiest thing you feel like you can do is to pile on, and you want to be part of that bandwagon, and you want to like, oh, let me pile on to this because it's like it's the easiest thing to do. It's like, come on, do the heavy lifting.
Show
Make
up.
Change.
Call the Home Depot and ask them, like,
what happened?
Let's talk about this, you know? How are you going to address this in a constructive way so this doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
That's what we need to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I've worked in bars before. I've thrown people out before. Have people yelled at me for throwing them out? Yes, they have. Did they deserve to get thrown out? Yes, they have. Did Violet deserve to be thrown out? I don't know.
She may have deserved to get thrown out for other reasons that we don't know about, but the way she was thrown out is wrong. And when you're dealing with nonconformists in a club that is supposed to be open to everyone, you really need to think twice about that. And it's and they're wrong. They're they're absolutely wrong in throwing her out the way they did. And you know, at the same time, Perez Hilton, when he got into the fight with the Black Eyed Peas bodyguard, remember
he
that?
He called him a fag. He called Will Adam a faggot, and he got hit.
Yeah.
And everybody said he deserved to be hit.
And I think, you know, when you're hurt, you want to react to other people in a way that is going to hurt them back. And that's a normal, rational reaction to have. But at the same time, it's not a reaction that's going to get things to be better for the future, for yourself and for other people. That's all. I'm just wanting people to step back for a second and have a thoughtful conversation about these things. Because you know what? Lives are at stake right now. People in Puerto Rico really need your help. So please take a moment and write to your congressperson and say, what have you done for me, for Puerto Rico lately? These are American citizens. We fly the U.S. flag alongside, just like states do. They have the state flag and the American flag. We have the Puerto Rican flag, which looks like Captain America's outfit, and the Puerto Rican flag. We fly both flags, and we fly the rainbow flag, and we fly all kinds of flags because we are cosmopolitans. We're all in this together. That is all I have for you guys today. We want to thank you for the privilege and the honor and the joy of being able to do this podcast for you guys for all these years. We want to be around for you for many years from now. We thank you so much for your support and your enthusiasm for Mark and I. It's a real pleasure to be able to meet you guys eventually someday soon. We have some amazing rewards on the Kickstarter that you guys can actually meet us right away. We can go to Chipotle. We can have a Skype date. You guys can call Vivacious and us, and we can all interact together on the party line.
You can get a t-shirt, an apron. There's so much more.
Yeah, at cookingwithdragqueens.com. If you were thinking about supporting this, if you wanted Cooking with Drag Queens to continue, this is the time to do it. It takes $3,
$5, $10, $20, $25, $100, whatever you can afford, whatever you can do. Help us make this project happen so that we can continue creating the show that like is watched by thousands and thousands of people.
We have T.S. Madison ready to go.
Yes.
We got
scheduled.
A deep fryer reserved. We have a camera crew ready to go. I have an editor. We have a lighting. We have an amazing new version of Cooking with Drag Queens. Fry harder, baby. Mm-hmm. We're going to fry till our arteries are clogged up.
Till we can fry no more.
Fry no more.
That's fry no more forever.
That's going to happen with your help. We can get Vivacious to bring us life. We have amazing. We got queens from Vander Von Odd and season two of Dragula. And, I mean, just amazing drag queens and capturing them in really glorious ways. This only will happen with your support. Go to cookingwithdragqueens.com. I want to thank you guys so much for listening to this show. Tomorrow, what's happening tomorrow?
I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen in.
Let's just say it's ample-chested entertainment. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Fausta Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.